The following program is made possible with a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and was first broadcast in 1984. The world of Islam, decay or rebirth? Islamic culture and the plight of the Islamic artist today. The program is introduced by ABC's Peter Jennings.
One of the central cultural problems in today's world is the rapid erosion of indigenous culture, often centuries old, by a bland, homogenized mass culture. The effects of the inexorable spread of these values are visible for all to see. An ubiquitous youth culture, complete with its own music, dress code, and moral standards. The rise of mass communications and their over-reliance on the West for programs, and the artistic and cultural shift away from local or regional culture towards world markets and institutions invariably dominated by the West. If an artist or an intellectual looks for recognition today, he must usually seek it in the West, not within his own culture. Nowhere has this process further sapped self-confidence and a sense of cultural identity than in the Islamic world, particularly in its Arab heartland. In Asia and Africa, on the other hand, pre-Islamic cultures continue to flourish. In one sense, the bedrock of Islamic civilization is still intact, although under strain. Islam is a complete way of life with its own rituals and values. But in many instances, what passes for Islamic culture today is an empty shell of a glorious past, merely going through the motions. Yet there are signs, here and there, of a new dynamism, a new synthesis, and a new search that suggests some of that past genius and self-confidence may be reappearing. The program is reported and narrated by Julian Crandall Hollick.
By our knowledge, I think the whole Arab world lives on their past, on their great past, more than doing anything for future.
The visual arts are reduced to, I would say, zero. And even traditional arts, which generally are the last ones to die out, such as carpet making, are so decadent that my guess is that in another generation or so, they will be dead. Or let us say that the link with the past will have been cut off completely.
Many Muslims would doubtless agree with Nasir David Khalili and Malikian Shivani, both Iranian art experts living in Europe, that Islamic culture is indeed in a sorry state today. Some of the reasons for this sad decline were self-inflicted. In the 13th century, the ulama, or religious leaders, had effectively brought a halt to creative thought. Intellectual contacts with the West also declined rapidly, just when Europe was embarking on its own renaissance. Along with the gradual fragmentation of the Caliphate or Islamic Empire, also disappeared perhaps the major source of cultural patronage. But there were also obvious external reasons. Colonialism sapped the creative self-confidence of many Muslim artists. Not surprisingly, colonial administrations were not especially keen to encourage feelings of national or cultural identity. An art form like poetry, for example, therefore tended to reflect understandable feelings of impotence, pessimism, and helplessness. Another of the most vibrant forms of traditional Islamic culture had been architecture. But today, this too has fallen into a sad state of mere imitation of the past.
Unfortunately, most of the time, Islamicized architecture means simply to put a few arches on the facade.
For Ismail Seregedin, an Egyptian town planner and architect, this form of Islamic architecture is largely an exercise in futility.
And it misses completely the way the building is designed, and whether that way is compatible with a certain set of interpersonal relations and types of activities that would conform to an ethos of the Islamic way of life. which in itself is one that is evolving and changing rapidly, and one that is suitable for the Muslim people of today may not necessarily be what was suitable for the Muslim people of 8 centuries ago. An important point and one to remember. So I think that one should avoid simply creating a pastiche of decorative elements taken from historical periods of Muslim architecture and say this is what represents Muslim architecture today.
Much of the architecture in the Islamic world today can best be described as a hodgepodge of styles, often copying the worst in Western design. One obvious example would be the high-rise apartment blocks in many Middle Eastern countries. For Saudi architect Ahmed Bakari in Jeddah, the whole concept is alien to the traditional privacy of Muslim family life.
It does not fit the Muslim way of life, and it does not suit his ideals, and it also does not fit the climatic conditions of most of the Islamic countries.
Luckily, Ahmed Bakari finds some exceptions to this trend.
Yes, I would say there are some architects who successfully attempted what I may call personally contemporary architecture of the Muslims. And of those people, I would like to mention probably Hassan Fathi of Egypt and Shadourji from Iraq. Some Turkish architects, and some architects and town planners from Tunisia.
On the other hand, the oral and literary forms of Islamic culture are very much alive all over the Islamic world. Quranic recitation classes and competitions are held from Morocco to Indonesia. Another literary form very much alive is poetry. This is rather different from what we're perhaps used to nowadays in the West. In many Muslim countries, poetry is still a major form of social communication, altogether more informal, conversational, and overtly topical than poetry as we know it. Here, for example, the Pakistani poet Faraz reads from his poem Beirut.
Beirut. Ye sarburida badan hai kiska? Ye jamae khoon kafan hai kiska? Ye zakhmul khurda rida hai kiski? Ye para para sada hai kiski? یہ کس لہو سے زمین یاقوت بن گئی ہے یہ کس کی آغوش کس کا تابوت بن گئی
The Muslim artist or intellectual today is faced with essentially three choices. He can try to shut out Western influence and knowledge. He can opt to give up his own heritage and become westernized. Or he can attempt to marry the two and produce an original synthesis. Adam Hinayn is an Egyptian sculptor and artist who found Western art forms a liberating influence on his own development.
And I made the fine art school, the academy. And then I knew about Moore. I saw some books about Henry Moore and modern sculptors. So we began to search, to know that there is another world, another thing. So I began to look towards Europe and the experiments that they have in modern art. And I tried to find myself between the two directions.
For Iraqi artist Vazma Chorbachi, Western training was in fact a major obstacle to the learning of her Islamic heritage. Chorbachi began her search in Baghdad.
And in Europe, and then in the States. However, even when I was in Baghdad and Beirut, my teachers were mainly foreigners, and if they were not foreigners, they were Arabs or Muslims. They were trained and taught in Western schools. And therefore, the influence was unavoidable even in the Muslim countries.
Vazma Chorbachi is a painter, and it's paradoxical that painting, so long a secondary art form in the Muslim world, has become so dynamic and creative. But how Islamic is it? Wada Faris is an Iraqi art dealer who has tried to champion Arab art. He acknowledges its dynamism, but is scornful of artists who claim to be Islamic merely by including a snatch of calligraphy in their work.
Some artists, contemporary artists, fall for it and they say, I am Islamic artist and whatever it is, and they beat their chests with it. It's a pretext they hide behind. They are not people that can face their time.
All of this brings one directly to the question, what exactly is Islamic art? Is it merely a convenient label for Arab, Persian, African, or Asian art? Or is it really something different with its own distinct Islamic identity?
There is not only whether it is that the person is using calligraphy or using traditional visual Islamic forms, but that the spirit and the belief is energized in that painting.
Vazma Chorbachi is in no doubt that there is purely Islamic art being produced today.
It is not one, two, or three characteristics only. It's a whole lump sum of facts that go into there. A characteristic item as a calligraphy or a geometry could be dead spiritually and could be used automatically and could be used in a dead way. It's when the form, the visual form itself, and the spiritual essence is conveyed, then both form and essence sort of combine, and there the spirit is vibrant. And when the spirit is vibrant, that is Islamic.
Ahmed Mustafa is a young Egyptian artist who has little hesitation in admitting that Islam is central to his creativity.
Do you consider yourself a Muslim first and an artist second?
I'm certainly Muslim first, no doubt about that.
But that being a Muslim conditions your art.
True. The best answer to that is what actually one of the calligraphers, when he asked to express what calligraphy is, to tell them, he said it's a homage to God.
Both Vazma Chorbachi and Ahmed Mustafa are attempting to go beyond a mere synthesis of traditional forms with Western techniques. They're trying to create something new. But in common with the Baghdad one-dimensional school and artists such as Dia Al-Azawi, Shakir Hassan, or Rafal al-Nisiri, they continue to draw much of their inspiration from Arabic calligraphy.
The themes or even the titles of the abstract paintings are taken directly from the poetry, from the Quran, from the traditional myths. They use very much the verbal culture as an inspiration.
Maureen Abdullah is living heritage editor of the Islamic monthly, Arabia.
Some of them feel quite schizophrenic. Some of them are still trying to synthesize the two. Others feel very, very much that they can take what they want from the West in terms of technique and materials, but they look very carefully to their heritage for their inspiration. And what comes out on the canvas is essentially a synthesis of the two.
The paintings of Azawi, Nasiri, Gaya Sakras from Syria, or Rashid Karachi from Algeria are easily accessible even to a non-Muslim public, accustomed to the abstract creations of 20th century Western art.
But the use of calligraphy is very strong. And that is the main obvious Islamic aspect of their work. but it's a marriage of texture. You get the feel of the geography of the land. You get the influence of the word as the word, as calligraphy, and you get the influence of the word as the heritage in their work.
The reason I call it Quranic music is simply because it's, I wanted to express the chanting theme of the prayers.
Much of Ahmed Mustafa's work consists of huge woven tapestries directly inspired by the Quran.
The arrangement of the actual detached Arabic letter forms in the composition is to do to visually express the note and the chanting theme of the prayers. In another way, I have used a Quranic verse. I've used it in various ways, either using different sizes or using or use it in different space, different location in the composition. And from such varieties, plus the varieties of colors, I try to represent some sort of Quranic music, or which is almost equivalent to a fugue.
Islamic art is abstract in essence. Designs and patterns often grow out of cellular motifs and are then developed along mathematical or geometrical lines. Basma Chobachi thinks it is particularly relevant in today's world.
The intrigue with and the amazement and joy of seeing the abstract and going after it is much more captivating. It is much more exciting, and it is, I think, tremendously much more exciting for contemporary man, for somebody who is in line with the 20th century and with what is happening. It's an incredible treasure.
There are three main problems working against a revival of Islamic cultural forms. Perhaps the most important for the individual artist is the relative lack of a market, as Maureen Abdullah explains.
The Arab, in general, he's not a collector. His whole background negates collecting. I mean, the Bedouin mm-hmm. could not afford to collect anything. I mean, he was on the move. He collected certain things, but he was not a collector of furniture.
So who do these people paint for?
This is the problem. They are working. They're having a difficult time. As one gallery owner in Paris told me recently, an Iraqi who opened a gallery in Paris, which was supposed to be a showpiece for Arab artists. The Arabs don't buy Arab art. The Westerners are buying Arab art. They recognize in it something fresh, something exciting, something new. The Arabs that are starting to buy are very, very much influenced by West is best. And so they are tending to pay too much for established artists instead of recognizing the potential of their own artists.
For many artists, the state is the most important, perhaps the only source of patronage.
The state is buying. The Arab states are buying, especially in countries like Iraq and Egypt, and to a certain extent Syria. But this is having, it's a double-edged effect, because in some ways the state is dictating what it wants to buy, and the artists are tending to paint to please the regime. The most successful artists, among the most successful artists, it's not fair to generalize, are ones who have come and worked in Europe and have escaped the political pressures.
And are still working in Europe.
Vazma Chobachi is worried that government financial support may be counterproductive.
I think the encouragement and the support is at its peak at the moment. A lot of money is being funded, a lot of awareness is there, but whether it is the positive and right thing to do or not, this is the main issue. Whether what they're supporting, and the way they're supporting it, the way they're programming it, is to develop a creative new art or to somehow embalm an art that was alive and make it dead.
The second main problem for Muslim artists and intellectuals is to break out of the Western-oriented educational system that has suffocated their traditions. Vazma Chorbachi, for instance, realized there was nowhere she could learn, and so was forced to teach herself.
What I discovered is that there is a discrepancy and an identity crisis taking place, and that the only way for me to understand myself is to understand my heritage in a better way, and thoroughly understand it and digest it. And it turned out that I thought I would go to school and go to university in the West. It turned out I had to teach myself, really. I had to sit in with these forms and decipher them first.
Many of the most vital young artists who are trying to breathe life back into Islamic culture have chosen to live and work in the West. Ahmed Mustafa.
The reason, basically, that I have a much better way of freely expressing myself and having a neutral communication with everybody. In another way, I'm not locked up by any political issues, and I can move, I can display my work without any outside influence.
There's an obvious irony in the choice of the West for these Islamic artists, for it is by and large Western influence, particularly through youth culture or television, which is one of the biggest obstacles to a reemergence of an Islamic culture. For Egyptian writer Sherif Fatata in Cairo, Western influence is, to say the least, a mixed blessing.
You can't be against foreign influence, because art and culture and science are things that you learn from people and we exchange. It depends on what kind of foreign influence is being exerted. For example, if we speak of the United States has a tradition of science and of art and of culture, or has forms and contents of art and science and literature, which and of philosophical and historical thinking, which can be extremely useful and which can enrich our own culture if there is an exchange. But the type of culture that we are getting from the United States at the moment is the Dallas series, the cowboy serials, crimes, commodity values, big cars, luxury, things like that. And this kind of culture can't help.
At the opposite end of the Islamic world in Southeast Asia, Adib Adam, Malaysian Minister of Information, and the man responsible for what goes out over Malaysia's TV and radio, finds this type of Western culture harmful.
And here, I think, we have a lot of resistance. Film like Dallas, you know, portray a different lifestyle, permissiveness in Western society. And there have been a lot of resentment on a lot of this, the foreign component, because it is totally sort of contra. Alien to Islamic values.
Many of the wealthiest Muslim countries have invested heavily in the media, including their own television studios. According to Maureen Abdullah, the results have so far proved generally disappointing.
There's an incredibly heavy investment in the hardware. Some of these studios are the most modern, most up-to-date, most highly equipped anywhere in the world. In terms of software, there's a reluctance. There seems to be a discrepancy between the amount of money they're willing to invest in the machinery itself and the amount they're willing to invest in training and the production of good quality programs, so you have all of this superb material and very amateur results.
In the face of the onslaught of perceived Western tastes and values, can Islamic values really be revived? Once again, Vasma Chobachi.
The forces against it are tremendous, and the struggle is tremendous. However, the only thing that I keep reminding myself is that I should have faith, and that there would be in the 20th century something that is extremely beautiful.
I believe that the only remedy to bring about the glory of Islamic art is for the Arabs themselves to care for their own art. They shouldn't be ignorant about their own art.
Ismail Sergadin sees encouraging developments along these lines in contemporary Islamic architecture.
I think, in fact, one of the most encouraging developments that has taken place in the last 10 years has been the growing realization of Muslim architects throughout the world of the importance of their heritage. And the beginnings, and I really can't term it more than the beginnings of a genuine search for a form of cultural expression that is consonant with that heritage.
For Iraqi art dealer Wada Faris, on the other hand, there is a great danger in this conscious delving back into the past.
If the fashion is to be heritage and Islam and everybody stops being inventive and they start chewing on old forms.
Nasir David Khalili and Vasma Chobachi, on the other hand, reject this pessimism.
Yes, you're repeating the same tradition, but there is a lot in that same tradition which needs to be explored before you bring something new about.
Okay, so there's still room for growth.
There is a hell of a lot of room for growth. You don't need to bring about or to marry past with future. You have a great deal of glory in past you could explore instead of going out and try to bring something new.
We are people living today. We are not dead. We have a past and a very strong heritage in the past. And both are part and parcel of our being. So we're contemporary and we're creating something that is new, and our vision is new, yet it is rooted in something that is very old.
Decay or Rebirth was written and produced by Julian Crandall-Hollick. The program was introduced by ABC's Peter Jennings. The technical producer was Peter K. Storkerson, and the rebroadcast producer was Dean Capello. The music consultant was Brian Silver of International Music Associates. Consultant to this program was Professor Oleg Grabar of Harvard University. The World of Islam is a production of IBA, Independent Broadcasting Associates, in cooperation with WBUR Boston, and is made possible with a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Mark Schilling. If you'd like to comment on this program or to order cassette copies and transcripts, please phone area code 508-486-9180 or fax number 508-486-9652 during regular business hours. This is NPR, National Public Radio.